The revelations about President Bush's National Guard years mark yet another chapter in an already bitter presidential campaign. The fact that so much was revealed on a single day will strike some as a coincidence, others as a coordinated effort by the Democrats. Joining us now to talk about the substance and the politics of these new charges are Timothy Noah of our partner magazine Slate and Jonah Goldberg of the National Review Online. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks. Thank you for having me.
And first, let's talk about these new details. We have the Boston Globe reporting that Lieutenant Bush signed an agreement to join a National Guard unit in Boston when he went to business school at Harvard, but he never did. We have the 60 Minutes report last night that Mr. Bush was actually suspended from flying because he didn't meet the guard standards and missed an ordered physical. Does this really, these two things, do they really change our understanding of Mr. Bush's service? Let's start with Tim Noah.
I think the commitment he made in Boston is probably not hugely relevant because Bush was discharged officially in October 1973, which was practically the very beginning of the school year. What's more interesting is the evidence that's emerged that there was indeed favorable treatment that was granted to Bush.
This is Jonah here. I think most people have sort of decided already that Bush probably pulled some strings to get into the National Guard, and they don't care because he's been president for 3.5 years. The people who care about it don't like George Bush already. The people who don't care about it like George Bush already. I think it is sort of a non-starter. And frankly, I think the whole debate is fairly silly since, you know, the rationale that justifies this is that Kerry has taken a lot of fire from the Swift Boat vets for truth and all of that. And the difference is that George Bush has never highlighted what he did 30 years ago as a rationale for his presidency. John Kerry has made what he did 30 years ago the essential rationale for his presidency. One is a lot more fair game and a lot more relevant than the other.
Jonah, I'll agree with you that this doesn't change most people's understanding of what happened, but it is contrary to what the White House has said. President Bush has lied about this. He said he did not receive preferential treatment when clearly he did. So there's a truthfulness issue here. And more important, yes, the timing is clearly politically motivated, but the White House could have saved itself a lot of grief several months ago when it assured us that it had provided all of the available documentation on his National Guard service. Clearly, it didn't provide all of the documentation, either because it overlooked it or withheld it.
Well, or because the Pentagon screwed up, which is a story that has been going around Washington lately, that the White House is very cross with the Pentagon because it kept promising that they released all the information available, and then all of a sudden they're releasing new information to the Associated Press. It could be bureaucratic more than anything else.
In which case, it speaks to Bush's competence. If he can't get the Pentagon to turn up his own service record, how can he get anything else done in Washington?
Let me take you back, though, to the timing of this. In addition to the news reports yesterday, there is this independent political group called Texans for Truth. They released an ad accusing Mr. Bush of not showing up for guard duty in Alabama. We'll hear just a bit of this.
I heard George Bush get up and say, I served in the 187th Air National Guard in Montgomery, Alabama. Really, you know, that was my unit, and I don't remember seeing you there.
That is Bob Mintz, a former National Guardsman. We assume that the drums have been added by the ad makers there. Jonah, what do you think about this Alabama side of the story?
Oh, I don't know. Look, I mean, I think it's kind of funny that everyone talks about the fog of war, and here we have the fog of stateside service. I think Bush probably did slack off in Alabama. The evidence seems to be pretty overwhelming there. What you don't hear is that Bush was served pretty much full time for 2 years in Texas before he went. I think Bush got away with sort of gaming the system in Alabama. I don't think it's all of that interesting anymore.
Tim Noah, the White House communications director Don Bartlett, in a very nuanced statement, says this: every step of the way, President Bush was meeting his requirements, granted permission to meet his requirements.
Well, that's obviously not true because we know for a fact that he did not meet the requirement to have a physical exam. The discharge I won't quarrel with, but at the same time, there is a lack of truthfulness by the White House about George Bush's essentially draft dodging.
Now, the White House says, though, about the physical exam, that he didn't get the physical because he was not going to fly. The guard unit no longer flew the kind of planes that he trained on.
Well, he was in the military. He was told to have a physical. When you're in the military, you're told to do something, you do it.
I think there's this desire among a lot of people to find the most sinister explanations for all of these things as possible. If you talk to people, I've talked to quite a few people who were in the National Guard back then, and a lot of people were in active duty back then, And as Tim suggested, in 1973, 1972, the war was winding down. The National Guard became a much more sort of lackadaisical operation, especially for people who were winding up their service and already had most of their tickets punched. And it could be that Bush, when he was young and irresponsible and just didn't show because he thought it was like skipping a class or somewhat. I'm not trying to rationalize this. I think Bush should have shown. I think it was stupid for him not to show. He probably wishes he had shown now. But I think all of this, the rush to find this incredibly sinister pattern of behavior in which, you know, a word like draft dodger gets to be used freely, is an attempt to sort of spin this in as damaging a way as possible. And for a lot of people, it seems to me it's a desire to spin it as a way of payback against all of the Swift boat stuff and all of that.
Jonah Goldberg of the National Review Online and Timothy Noah, who writes the Chatterbox column for Slate.com. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.